step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 437. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined today by Mr. Nick Mayo.
Howdy!
Nick to the first power! Woo! You're listening to us on KOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We also stream this puppy live at KOOP.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
You're a riot, Alice. Regular riot. I hope they like those jokes on the moon, because that's where you're going.
Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. On the show today, we are joined by Capital T Theater and their show, The Brother's Size by Terrell Avon McCraney. And also City Theater will be here with their show that they're doing called The Seafarer by Connor McPherson. And of course, we'll have lively views of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Denver, as well as Northern and Southern Ireland. You stay with us.
Baby, you're the greatest.
Baby, you're the greatest.
You're the greatest.
That was a little thing from the Honeymooners.
I know why you put that on there.
Why, pray tell?
I mean, because there's a musical version of it.
There is a musical version. It just opened at Paper Mill.
I know, and it's getting a lot of cool attention.
And we're going to talk about that in just a second. So, first of all, checking in with you. Lovely show last week.
Thanks.
I enjoyed listening.
I'm glad you're back. I miss you when you're not here.
Well, I'm gone again next week.
Well, don't.
I know. I don't want to. You know, I don't know why people schedule things always on Wednesdays.
Well, I'm of two minds because I'm happy that you are as in demand as you are, and I'm sad because I don't get to see you on Wednesdays.
But I do enjoy listening to you and Nicole, and it's fun to listen to you guys. So you guys do a great job.
Thanks.
You did great when you were here by yourself. It's all, you know, it's a mutual admiration society.
Yeah!
Yay! So let's introduce the folks that have joined us here. Oh, first of all, before we introduce everybody that's here, we just need to say that, you know, we zigzagged through the world with Kim Simpson today on International Vote Bazaar.
Gracias, Kim.
It's a zigzag of music.
It was amazing. Good show.
So the thing I like about Kim is not only can he zig,
he can zag.
He also zags.
Yes.
Okay. So here in the studio with us is, let's see if I got the right one, John Christopher.
Hello.
I got the right one. Sean Christopher.
Hello.
Kaylee Axtell.
Hello.
Yeah, you got to get right up on that microphone. And Jason Phelps is way too tall.
Hello.
And that's Jason
up
Phelps.
Here.
Way up there. And we have Rick Falcons. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Let's just get right to it. There's lots of stuff I want to talk
about.
There's
a whole lot of stuff going on.
Just way too much to talk about. But I'm going to start with the difficult stuff and get to the easier stuff.
I like that plan.
Y'all talked about it last week, and I think we've had this discussion every single week.
Unfortunately, I think we have.
But this time, it has hit the Broadway community, and we're talking about all the sexual harassment stuff that's going on. Kevin Spacey was accused by. Oh my God! Just
Anthony Rapp.
Anthony Rapp. I was going to say Aaron Trevait.
Oh, totally different story.
Totally different person. He's also in the news. But Anthony Rapp came out and said that Kevin Spacey, when Anthony Rapp was 14 and Kevin Spacey was in his early 20s, was inappropriate to him. Kevin Spacey then On the face of it, actually, I was wondering why everybody got so upset, because he basically said, I don't remember this incident, but it's terrible if it happened. I owe Anthony a huge apology because of it, to carry that for so many years. Then Kevin Spacey went on to take this opportunity to come out as a person living as a gay man, which that's where he took the heat. And the fallout has been pretty incredible. The House of Cards is ending the show after this season because of this. But it's I was of such mixed emotions as I read this whole story. First of all, shame on Kevin Spacey, first of all, for doing it in the first place. But I thought his reaction or his apology was wonderful. But the tacking on of other stuff is sort of what then made it bad. I don't know. I'm interested what other people think.
Anyone in our guests have any thoughts or opinions about this?
Well, I also, you know, he mentioned that it happened, it was a drunken...
Not an excuse.
It is not an excuse. You're still responsible for your behavior.
Yeah, not an excuse, unfortunately. So. Well, not unfortunately. Yeah.
I feel like it's our responsibility to praise and give voice to the victim's voice. So yep. I am, I think Anthony Rapp has always been a very brave man,
mm-hmm.
and a wonderful advocate and voice of truth and integrity. So in this, I hear his voice louder and his integrity than I do the lack of integrity from Kevin Spacey. And so my attention shifts to the victim and celebrating the victim's bravery and encouraging more people to follow in footsteps and speak up about sexual harassment and sexual abuse.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. I also think that, again, the coming out notwithstanding, the acceptance of responsibility was, I think, admirable as well.
Yes. I do think if we look at it from Kevin Spacey had the opportunity in the 90s, if he were to have lived his life with integrity, to be the first openly gay male actor to win an Academy Award, yeah. therefore flinging the hinges off of the doors that bind so many of us back, and it was a missed opportunity then, and this was a missed opportunity as well.
Agreed.
So, like I said, I go back to the voice of integrity in that situation, which is Anthony, and he has continued to set an example not only for the youth, but now for all of us as what it is to be a brave person and speak out against sexual harassment.
Absolutely, very well said. We will move on.
And there are more allegations and other stories that are coming out too.
They will not stop
about Kevin Spacey.
Oh, 100%.
I just read before I came here.
Anyone who works in that industry, in this industry, knows he has been. This is not new information to us, and it will continue to come out.
Right. But it's not, you know, not new information. Period. I mean, you've had people like Corey Feldman, you know, coming out years ago talking about stuff like this. But I think what we do have now is, you know, the validation of, like, you know, the media sources now picking the story up, and, you know, like you said, people actually coming out and, you know, admitting it to a certain extent. So we do have to give them credit for doing
it. And it is shining an incredible light on stuff. I listened to, this is not theater news per se, but Gretchen Carlson was on The Daily Show last night, and I thought it was a really wonderful conversation in that he said, so The Daily Show and Gretchen Carlson, the politics do not mix. That's oil and water. But they said right away that this is not a political issue. And it's come out with people on both sides of the political spectrum. And ideologies are guilty of this equally. And so I'm glad that it really, I mean, it's been politicized a little bit, but it's also gotten to a point where it can't be politicized anymore. Mm-hmm. But people are coming out and talking, and that's the net result, the overall result will be a good thing.
Yeah.
And we will teach our young boys and men early at an age to respect everybody they deal with.
Right.
And I
am proud of our community as well for setting a zero tolerance for this kind of behavior. And I think, unfortunately, it comes at a cost, right? But I am very, very proud of our industry for saying, This is, we do not tolerate this in any form or fashion. And here's what will happen. I mean, this is a man whose career is over and ended.
Yep.
No more.
I'm going to push back a little bit. I am indeed happy that it's doing it, but these are steps that should have been taken 50 years ago.
I completely agree, but so, I'm happy that they're
forced to face the truth.
It's happy is not a word. Yeah. As I said it, I'm not happy about any of it.
But there goes what I'm saying about the apology. You know, it's very easy to make a non-apology apology, but the apology was not a non-apology. It was, yep, I probably did it. Even though I don't remember it. And that's the same thing that's happening in the industry when the industry starts saying, we have a zero tolerance. We should have had a zero tolerance a long time ago.
I completely agree. And the way he dealt with this situation, Kevin Spacey, is in keeping with his moral integrity or lack thereof. Even the way he dealt with this is in keeping with that person's character. So once again, like, bravo to people like Anthony Rapp for speaking up.
Cool. Moving on to... Much less serious, but there was a... Did y'all see the Twitter war between Donald Trump and Michael Moore?
So funny.
No.
Okay,
no,
so Donald Trump... So Michael Moore, obviously, it's like that whole show that
loves
he had on
him,
Broadway.
Right?
Right. Me think he doth protest too much.
Yes.
I think, in terms of My Surrender was really just all about the Donald Trump presidency. So Terms of My Surrender closed last week or the week before. Donald Trump tweeted, while not at all presidential, I must point out that the sloppy Michael Moore show on Broadway was a total bomb and was forced to close. Sad.
Forced to close.
Which
is important
information
with the responses coming
right
up.
It was a 12-week limited run. Michael Moore then came over. There was a whole bunch of other Twitter tweets from Michael Moore. But he goes, you must have my smash hit of a Broadway show confused with your presidency.
Oh, nice.
Which is a total bomb and will indeed close early. Not sad.
And this is how you retort, right?
Right.
This is how you do it.
Although they're both wrong. I mean, it was a limited run, did not close early, but it also was not a smash hit.
Well, yes.
It was. They were doing 3/4 houses. Yeah. But still... he played his entire 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I also love as you said, there are so many tweets back and forth. One of my favorite ones that Michael Moore tweeted was a picture of him with Jared Kushner saying, and he liked it. So even Trump's son-in-law going to see the show.
That's true.
It's pretty funny.
And then somebody, Jason Zinnemann, I don't know, the last thing of this article said, got to hand it to Michael Moore, though. His entire show felt like an attempt to bait Trump into that tweet. Bravo, dude.
And it worked.
It took it that long because Trump didn't say anything.
You know what? I call that a smash hit because he got exactly what he was searching for.
He got what he wanted. Okay. And I wish
I know.
Nicole was here for this because she would hear this.
She loves it so much.
She loves that. And so that was for her. And just because I love her so much, she gets a second one. So that I'm alluding to the agent, and I don't put all my notes in order, so now I have to go find it. That we'd been talked about several. This is the guy that he's an ex-theater agent, and he got investors together because he said he had a show, one-woman play called The Kathleen Battle Project. He had the Booth Theater on hold for it. He had, what's her name? I can never remember her name.
Yes.
Her. She was set to do it.
Lupita.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I'm like, wow.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yes, amazing talent.
And so he had all of that stuff, and he built these people out of $250,000. And surprise, he got caught.
He got caught.
So
isn't it 6 months in the clinka?
It's 6 months in the clinka, and of course I believe he has to pay back the money plus.
Ouch. I think he should have to pay back the money plus 10% agent's commission. Har har har.
That's funny. All right. Oh, next on the list. Let's talk about M. Butterfly, which opened. It's our one Broadway opening. It's sort of a not a.
No, not a good review. It compares it to a moth.
It does. Actually.
I love Ben Brantley. He makes me laugh. I love him when he's funny.
Yeah, that was his first. The very first line in his review was, maybe they should call it a moth. Or M a moth.
Yeah.
So this is David Henry Hwang's play that opened in the 90s. I do have a quick story about the original M. Butterfly. A very dear friend of mine, Sarah Miles, not the Sarah Miles, it's a different Sarah Miles, was dancing in the Tony's show that year that M. Butterfly was up. And she was standing backstage next to John Lithgow. And it was getting ready for something to do with M. Butterfly. And she said to him, hey, I hear the show's pretty good. Have you seen it? He goes, yeah.
That's always fun. I love when that happens.
So it says that David Henry Hwang's M. Butterfly returns to Broadway on heavier, drabber wings. Now, I had such hope for this because it was Julie Taymor.
Everyone had hopes, and even Ben Brantley mentions in that review that he himself had high hopes for her kind of return and redemption.
Yeah, and this may be it for her, I think.
Yeah. I
don't know if it's ever it for Julie Taymor. You know, people love her. Well, they keep hiring her.
Well, this is her first time on Broadway since Spider-Man. But she
Which was
in the
a
part
hit, right?
with not with her.
No.
There's no denying that is an incredibly talented artist.
I call her a genius.
She is.
And like all of us, kind of hit or miss in our genius,
right,
you know?
Which is fair.
I was disappointed as well for her, but also I think she'll have other opportunities. Maybe not on the Great White Way, but the Great Gray Way, or the.
Well, interesting. The reviews I read really mentioned her very little. It was all really about he retooled the book. It's not a revival per se. They're calling it a revisal.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
He rewrote it to match more what it's based on a true story.
Which is also, you know, if you blink your eyes, you could be in a different time on Broadway. It's the same thing with Torch Song Trilogy, which is now Torch Song. In order for these things to work, there has to be slight revisions.
Right.
Well, but according to this, it didn't really need that. I'm hearing dings. Is that Nicole Shiro?
She's all up on my phone. Hi, Nicole. She is all
ding-dingy.
Shout out to
Nicole Shiro. So next time, instead of dinging, Nicole, come and be on the show.
Hope your back feels better.
So anyway, the show M. Butterfly deals with a spy scandal where a man poses as a woman to bring a spy out. And then there's a love, and then he falls in love with her. But then there's the bringing in the real life thing, which is a man posing to be a woman, posing to be a man, posing to be a woman.
All Shakespeare.
But Ben Brantley says, this extra turn of the screw of pretense is also directly from the case history of Monsieur Bosco, which I'm sure I'm not pronouncing. But for audiences who must digest an already complex story within less than 3 hours of stage time, it's a lot to assimilate. So mm-hmm. I think he made it just a lot more didactic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he calls it a grinding Brechtian self-conscious show.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. No, but so the interesting thing is this will probably leave the Court Theater open for a musical yet to be named to come in. And the three that Michael Riedel thinks is going to be the aforementioned.
The one we mentioned before.
The one we talked about before, which is the Honeymooners. The Honeymooners. Donna Summer.
Oh, Last Dance.
And then what was the third one? The third one was, which we played on the show 2 weeks ago. Why am I losing the name of it? Hadestown.
Uh-huh.
Which I'm really excited about Hadestown. So most people that I think that it's really going to be the Donna Summer thing, because it's got names and it's got legs.
It does. But I think it's in that article Michael Reeder wrote in the Post. Mm-hmm. They all are contenders, and I don't think that it's just M. Butterfly closing that would leave that theater open. I think it's also
the Nederlander. Mm-hmm. War Paint is is leaving this Sunday, uh-huh. And the Hudson, which has got the Parisian Woman, uh-huh. with Uma Thurman, it starts previews November 9th.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was confusing that with the other the Time of the Conways. Sorry.
Yeah, Time of the Conways.
So is the Parisian Woman just for like folks who want to see House of Cards live?
I think so. In a lot of ways, yes. Because as we've talked about it, they're going to rewrite it every week to change based on current events. Mm-hmm. But it stars Uma Thurman, and it looks pretty good, but they don't expect it to last very long. And then The Court for M. Butterfly.
I just also want to throw out, I know that Prom announced its Broadway dates, but not a theater. Maybe that could, come in there. I have no idea. I'm talking nonsense.
Don't know, but it's good. But it's going to be an interesting theater.
Yeah,
season.
And it's that time of year, right, where people start circling and vying for those theaters.
Yeah, and the band's visit going to be that sleep. The band's visit is going to be
Come From Away.
Come From Away. Yeah. I was about to say This Is Us, which I love, by the way.
Well, that too.
The Come From Away of this season.
Hartman is seeing the matinee right now as we speak of the band's visit.
Is he in New York?
He is. He's there for a week.
He didn't ask me to go with him.
He did. He left it on your voicemail. You never check your voicemail. Uh-oh.
He may have left it on my answering machine.
He did. You ran out of tape. Do you remember when that was actually an excuse? Oh, my answering machine ran out of tape.
I saved my voicemail.
Thanks.
The other thing that's interesting, have you heard of the musical Moulin Rouge that's coming?
Yeah,
and
Karen
the names
Olivo.
That are attached to it? Karen Olivo. And the Karen Olivo has an interesting story because she got out of the business. If you remember correctly,
I mean she's a little bit like Cher's comeback tour. She's always leaving and coming back.
She left the business, but she's now in
Hamilton in Chicago.
Well, she did Hamilton in Chicago, but she's now doing she's rehearsing for a local production in Madison, Wisconsin of Fun Home.
I didn't know that.
And she's been part of. She's been part of Moulin Rouge from the beginning. And Aaron Tveit. Back mm-hmm. to Aaron Tveit. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, she's doing the lead in Fun Home, Madison, Wisconsin, Forward Theater Company.
That's phenomenal. I know that's...
Yep. But she got out of the business. She said she was like leaving.
Yep.
Leaving. Yep. On a jet plane.
I dropped Cher. Michael went to the industry reading yesterday of Cher, the musical. He loved it. He had three different chairs at three mm-hmm. different times in their life.
Donna Summers too, by the way.
I mean, there's something about threes.
Yeah,
comedy
and comes
threes.
In threes. All right, I gotta get moving. The Humans is going to start a national tour. What I love about this is we rarely see straight plays touring.
And the director Joe Mantello is setting this tour, which usually you have an assistant director setting this tour. Amazing cast. I will be going to see it in Dallas because I love this play.
I'm going with you.
Yeah, let's go together.
We're going to go together.
We'll stay. We'll make a weekend of it.
We will make a weekend of it. And speaking of shows that go on tour, did you see this article that about Les Mis in Chicago and talking about the salaries that? Touring shows don't make. So I think it was in 2008, 2009, somewhere, 2004, Equity, our lovely union, mm-hmm. Made this deal where they said, okay, so back in the day, if you were touring a Broadway show, it was a production contract.
You make bank.
You got paid the same thing they did on Broadway. Well, they changed that because they were worried about non-equity shows coming in, and so they said, okay, you no longer can make money. But what Les Mis is doing, and I think this is great, when you have a show that's selling out, like Les Mis is always selling out, when they sell out on the road, they get a percentage of the profits.
Oh, wow.
And, or they get a bump in their salary and a percentage of their profits. Mm. So if they're selling out and selling out as they are in Chicago, then they all of a sudden they get better money than people on Broadway. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Especially when you've got these shows like Phantom that still draw in the crowds. God knows why. that would be great for the actors working there to see a little piece of that, because the producers and the promoters and all those people are bringing in the bucks. And there's Nicole saying something. We'll
saying
just
something.
Pretend what she's saying about
yeah,
whatever
Nicole,
we said
agree.
45 seconds ago.
Oh my gosh, Cher musical, everything. That's what Nicole said. I agree, Nicole.
But right now, the minimum salaries for touring people are less than half, or just slightly more than half the production contract. And this kills me because I wanted to do, you know, I talked about doing things in the regions and I had all this time to and we don't really have time to do it, but I was going to focus on, I looked at the map of LORT theaters in the country, and LORT is the League of Resident Theaters.
Regional theaters,
Of which Texas has two, Dallas Theater Center and the Alley. And there's things on both coasts and then nothing in the center.
I know!
Except for Denver Theater Center. And Denver Theater Center, which is I was going to focus on today, is just amazing. Mm-hmm. It started from a woman named Helen Bonifils and a Broadway producer named Donald Sewell. Helen Bonifils was part owner of the baseball team. Not baseball team. The Denver Post. I get
baseball and newspapers. Always.
All the time. Yeah. Anyway, I was going to spend a lot of time talking about this, and now I can't. But it has blossomed in, and please take some time. Maybe go look at the website. There'll be a link on our site to see it.
It's a beautiful theater.
They have 9 theater spaces, and specifically, there's one. The thrust space is gorge.
Yeah, and you know what, Lisa? I'm so glad you talked about Denver Theater Center, because they're doing something so correctly as a regional theater that not only makes producers want to workshop their things there. I mean, they just got through doing Frozen. The Unsinkable Molly Brown did tryouts there. Yep. It really is a place where not only producers but actors
flock to. The Laramie Project.
There. It's a great theater, so we should all look at what they're doing and what they're doing correctly, celebrate it, and see if we can take some of what they're doing and emulate it.
Absolutely. And they're in the middle of the country. There's no reason why Denver should be such a great theater town, but there it is.
It's pretty good.
It didn't hurt that they had a lot of money behind it, and the city.
The newspaper baseballs.
Don't make fun of newspaper baseballs.
I'm not making fun.
All right. So one of the things I did miss on Sunday, falsettos.
I know.
Did you see it?
Oh, I didn't.
I totally forgot to record it. So every Friday this month, I forgot which PBS program it is, but they're doing something on theater. This next week is something else, and the week following that is the In the Heights documentary.
Oh, wow.
They did She Loves Me 2 weeks ago. So this is something that's worthwhile seeing. I will try to remember to mention it every Wednesday and do as good as I just did right now, saying, I don't know what's happening this Friday. But look at your TV
guide,
folks.
But we missed falsettos, which is our shared. We love that piece.
Love falsettos. And we're going to go back listening to Cherry Renee Scott doing Holding the Ground. And she stopped the show with this number.
I've never heard her version. It's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite songs.
She stopped the show. I'm trying to keep sane as the rules. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by Nick Mayo. We are missing our Nicole Shiro today. We have been talking to Rick Falcons, Jason Phelps, John Christopher, Sean Christopher, and Kaylee Axtell. And now we're going to switch gears and talk specifically to our folks at Capital T. But before we do that, during the break, Kaylee, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 54 and don't choose anything with a 7 in it. What did you choose?
42.
Let's see what that is.
Hi, this is Stuart Moulton, and when I'm not producing Broadway's most illustrious divas for Austin's most discriminating audiences, I listen to Offstage and On the Air at 91.7 KOOP Hornsby Austin.
That was original co-host of Offstage and On the Air, Mr. Stuart Moulton.
Hey, Stuart.
Who's now who's married and living in New York at this point. Lovely man.
Hi, Stuart.
He just did a wonderful show. Austin Cabaret Theater came here and did a tribute show for Stephen Rice. I did not get to go, but I'm sure it was wonderful. So here we are. We're going to talk about Capital T Theater and the show, The Brothers' Sighs. You know what just dawned on me? Did I say The Brothers' Sighs at our opening?
You did.
I did. I don't remember saying it.
You sounded great.
Oh, thank you. By Terrell Alvin McCraney. And we have a whiff from that show, the director, the stage manager, and two of the performers. Jason Phelps, you are the director of the show,
yes,
are you not?
Yes, yes, yes.
Tell us what this show is.
Well, Terrell Alvin McCraney, who is also the writer from the
film. You call him Terrell, I call him Terrell.
Okay.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yes. Writer for Moonlight did this this play, The Brother Size, as part of a triptych he wrote in 2006, I believe. UT did In the Red and Brown Water last year, which is also part of this triptych. Takes place in Louisiana. This particular story is the story of these two brothers, one played by John Christopher named Ogun, and the other played by Sean Christopher. They are not, Sean and John are not brothers, but they play on
prove
stage.
Prove it, I need to see.
We brothers, but we ain't brothers.
I need to see the birth certificate.
Exactly. Sean plays Ochusi, and the third member of the cast is Delonte Keys, who plays Alegba.
Love the names.
Yeah.
So I, of course, know, but for those that don't, what do you mean by triptych?
Three plays, all in the same world. These do not need to be seen together. Some theaters around the country have done all three of them. They really are three different stories using the same characters and the same environment.
Right. And this got some great notices, I think, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Is that where it premiered?
I don't know where it premiered.
Oh, yeah, but that's
it's been done many places.
We need to know that.
MacArthur, Public. The Public, it's been done there. It's been done quite often.
Public. Speaking of that, there's a show about Joe Papp's earliness.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's it. So it sounds like. So is it? It's is this a comedy? A comic tragedy?
Yes, it's all of that.
All of those. We're gonna laugh. We're gonna cry.
Yes,
it's better than Cats.
Totally. Yeah. Much better than Cats. The dance numbers in this piece are much better than Cats. And John and Sean have amazing voices, and they get to sing in the show also.
Cannot wait to hear it. So do we? So where is it set? Is it contemporaneously?
It takes place in Louisiana. It could really take place anywhere in the South, but there's a flavor of the bayou in this particular show. So it has that flavor.
John, tell us a little bit about your character.
Well, my character, Ogun Size, is he's a workaholic. He's someone who has been forced to grow up early and kind of like in a parenting kind of role where he's looking out for his younger brother. So that's pretty much what we're observing during the play, is him having to manage his life and all of his expectations and things, you know, for himself, but then also kind of parent his younger brother. And so we get this feeling of like this, you know, like continual, like paternal relationship happening between the two. So I think just the beauty of that, you know, is what makes Ogun, the character of Ogun really stand out to me, is just to see how deep love goes.
Hmm.
And Sean, you played a little brother?
I do.
And so I hear how John has expressed it, and I'm someone that has an older brother who might think he's being very fatherly and good to me, but it just did nothing but piss me off.
Right.
What about your character?
And that is how Ochusi feels towards Ogun a lot of the times. Deep down, though, the love is still really there, because...
when it veers from my reality.
Well, through the text, you observe that Ochusi does have a true love for Ogun. And even though superficially you may see that he just wants him to get off his back and leave him the heck alone.
So this takes place in the American South. The names, though, I'm guessing, have an African bend to them. Is there a story behind that?
Right, yes.
You're looking over the director.
The director.
What can I say and what can't I say?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to give anything away.
Well, yeah, it does rise out of the West African Yoruba cosmology. Yes. Jason, if you'd like to
Absolutely.
Speak a
little more. I mean, all of these plays are rooted in that. I mean, the characters of Ogun, Ochusi, and Alegba are all... rooted in the Orishas from Yoruban cosmology.
Yeah, Orishas, yes.
So Ogun is the god or the spirit of hard work and
steel. Yes.
Ochusi is the hunter and the searching for his symbol is this bow and arrow, where he's always looking for the right place to enter. Alegba is more of a trickster. All of these are rooted in this Yoruba cosmology. That's all of Terrell Alva McCraney. There's a spirituality component to all of his work. I mean, it's even there in Moonlight too.
Fascinating. So. Right. Well, so you guys are prepared to do a little scene, are you not?
Yes.
Does somebody want to set that up for us?
This is the act one, scene one. This is the very first time you see the two of them interact.
Okay, this is John Christopher and Sean Christopher doing a scene from Capital T Theater's production of The Brothers Size.
Ogun Size enters. Osi! Calling for his brother Osi. Achusi!
Waking from his dream. What, man, what?
Get up.
Man coming in here turning on lights.
That's the sun.
Kissing his teeth.
Achusi!
Don't you get tired of going through this? Every morning we go through this.
Man, get up!
This hard. Early in the morning, you gotta be this hard.
Man, don't bring me that.
That's your job. That car shop got your name on it. That's your job.
Where your job?
I ain't got none. I'm currently seeking employment.
Currently?
I'm tired.
So you just gonna lay up here today?
Yeah, buddy. I don't sleep good at night. Tossed and turned all this morning, too. Tired, brother.
Kiss his teeth.
Yeah, man, you should stay home.
The shop, man.
Ogun, you better stop, man. Stop doing it to yourself. You keep working like that every day, all day at that dang shop, you're gonna work yourself to death. Death killed the lazy last.
Stop working.
Nah, rest. Get you some.
Quit working?
You own the car shop, yeah? That car shop yours, say Ogun's Car Shack, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You ain't gotta quit. Just get somebody to work it for you.
Deal.
What?
You hired.
Man.
You ain't got no job, right?
You know.
You currently seeking employment?
Ogun.
Seek your behind into that truck in 5 minutes.
I ain't applied for this job. I didn't even know you was hired.
Are you more than qualified, brother?
Oh, come on, Og.
Effective today, Osi.
Nah, man, nah. I'm turning this down. I don't want your job.
Wait a minute. Is you turning down work?
Oh,
man, you turning down a lot of stuff. First off, you forfeit your living here, right?
You threatening me?
I promise you.
Okay, I'll stay with on L.A.
Gua ain't gonna put up with your junk. On the leg, we ain't never like us, and for sure, not you. Also, you forcing me to have to tell your parole officer that you won't work. Smiles. Ogun Size exits.
I love that. What a great way of turning phrases and words, and it's just great. And right. I love the pacing and everything. So we only have a couple more minutes left, but I wanted to talk to our stage manager here for a little bit, because we oftentimes don't get the opportunity to have a stage manager here. Kaylee, tell me about the experience of stage managing the show and whatever else you want to impart upon our audience.
It's been really great. This is my second show with Cap T. I really like working with Jason and Mark. Cap T does really interesting...
Mark Piquel,
mm-hmm. Yes. Really interesting, different modern plays, which is really important, not just Shakespeare all the time, even though there's an avenue for that. But yeah, the stage managing process has been great. I really appreciate that Cap T actually hires people who are stage managers and not just actors to stage manage.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's important, very important. So tell, you know, we at the few times we do get a stage manager on here, we always take the time to explain what a stage manager does. So in your the nickel tour, what is this? I mean, it's a huge definition, but give us the couple sentence version of it.
The stage manager does the paperwork. So to explain a little bit more than that, starting at the beginning, sort of organizing the auditions, making sure everybody knows where they need to be and when they need to be, making sure that the director has background information about the actors and things like that. Once we decide who we're going to go forward with, they set the schedule, contact sheets, really just making sure that everybody knows exactly what's going on. When you're doing publicity, people know where they need to be. And then during the show, during rehearsals, you'll keep track of lines and things like that. You give line notes so they know where they are with things. And then currently in Austin, usually, because you don't really technically usually have a lighting and sound board operator, a lot of the time the stage manager will do that during the show, and that's what I'm doing.
I always like to describe the stage manager as the hub of the wheel.
Mm-hmm. She is that, no yeah. doubt.
Well, we are indeed out of time. Where can folks go? First of all, when do you open?
We opened last weekend.
Yeah.
We've got three more weekends to go. CapT.org for tickets. It's at Hyde Park Theater Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights at 8 o'clock.
Are you indeed CapT.org or CapitalT.org?
Oh, sorry. Capital T. CapitalTheater.org, yes.
Yeah. And again, you close on the 18th at Hyde Park
November
Theater. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully somewhere all of you can hang out with us backstage.
Yeah.
But thanks again for being on the show.
Yeah.
That was Jason Phelps, Kaylee Axtell, John Christopher, and Sean Christopher of Capital T Theater's production of The Brothers Size by and now I don't know how to pronounce it. Terrell Alvin McCraney at Hyde Park Theater through November 18th. For more information, capitalt.org. We'll be right back.
Finally gave up looking. Looking just proved a lie. Never even knew I had another half. But I've come, I've been through. Oh, brother.
I kind of wish that Nicole was here for that, too, because that was from Oh Brother, and that was who she calls Papa Poop singing just
then.
That was Joe Morton. Well, so that was great. sorry. There's stuff going on in the studio. Very quickly, for local stuff. I saw this and just... The Rude Mex is doing Bear Eats Bear. Did you happen to see this?
I didn't see it.
It looks fascinating. It is. So I will read the we invite you to the wild to join the rebellion for an immersive audio experience at an undisclosed location in downtown Austin. When society burns, what narrative remnants will survive? What tales will we whisper at our campfires?
Hey.
It looks fascinating. RudeMex.com to get information. It is this weekend and next weekend at an undisclosed. You buy the ticket, and they tell you. And no walk-ups. So if you want to see it, you have to make a reservation.
That sounds interesting.
And last night, I went out to Bastrop to see Little Shop of Horrors.
How was it?
Little Shop of Horrors, bop, shoo, bop. Little Shop of Horrors.
That one.
Today in theater history. I'm going to go very quickly so we have enough time to talk to our last guest. Opening night of The Emperor Jones by Eugene O'Neill.
Wow.
1920. This was the premiere in 1944 of Harvey.
Aww.
Elwood P. Dowd. It's so funny. When I read this, it starts out, the sentence says, Elwood P. Dowd sees a large white rabbit. And I went, Elwood P. Dowd, I know that name. It's somebody I know. I thought it was an actor I knew.
That's so funny.
Character. It starred Frank Fay and Josephine Hill. And the person that staged that production, the director, was one Antoinette Perry.
Heard of her.
The award for the New York Crama, it was nominated for the New York's Critics Circle Award, but you know what won?
What?
The Glass Meningere.
Oh, I've heard of the Glass Meningere.
Or Zwei Loki de Kristall. So just keeping, because we have to talk about David Merrick or
Scott Rudin.
Scott Rudin. So this is our David Merrick day. He was, he had to remove 2,800 posters on the subway from his musical called Subways Are for Sleeping, because it feared it might give some people the wrong idea about housing.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. I love that.
Astor Place Theater opened The Foreigner by Larry Hsu off Broadway in 1984. And then in 1990, there was a revival of OK that was done with all African-American cast led by Brian Stokes Mitchell.
Another three named actor.
Clive Barnes calls it surprisingly terrific.
Woo!
And guess what?
It was.
It was a David Merrick production. Only ran 77 performances.
See?
Yep. Directed by, never mind, that was a different show. Let's see. Let's just go to birthdays.
Yeah, happy birthday.
George Cotton, 1903. Beth Fowler, 1940. Beth Level, two Beths.
Oh, Beth Level.
1955.
Who's in The Prom that we spoke about.
She is in The Prom, we did. And Toni Collette, who I love, in 1972. Here locally, Agent Red of, I worked with her on Sky Candy. I don't think she works for Sky Candy. She has her own stuff. And here's what I find interesting. Do you know Danny and Rocker?
It is Rocker's birthday.
It is Rocker's birthday today. And tomorrow, it is Danny's birthday.
That's a busy day in
that
couple's life.
Did not know that. So Rocker Veristique is happy birthday. Danny Herman, happy birthday to you tomorrow. And also tomorrow, joining Danny on his birthday, equally fantastic, Mark Puhay.
Happy birthday, talented people.
Happy birthday. Bon anniversaire. Just real quick, like, just because I did, because I want, here's the Denver Theater Center's 2017-2018
season.
The Glass Menagerie.
Heard of it.
Frankenstein, Christmas Carol, Book of Will, The Christians, 2 Degrees, Disgraced, Secret Garden, and then they have a whole bunch of readings.
It makes me want to go to Denver.
Me too. Beautiful people of Denver. Beautiful people of Denver. All right. That's it. So we're going to go with, going to hear a little bit of that show from Subways Are for Sleeping called Once in a Lifetime. This particular number is sung by Mr. Tony Bennett.
Every day.
Ah, the Rude Mechs. Named after the Rude Mechanicals.
Don't be rude, Mechs.
But you could be. You could be a rude mechanical.
In a certain Shakespeare play called...
Midsummer Night's Dream.
By a William Shakespeare, not Harry Potter.
Harry Potter's William Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, starring Puck
and Tony Beignet.
Oh, my Lord. So... If you didn't know, you were listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo.
Howdy, howdy.
We are missing Miss Nicole Shiro. So we have no Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We just got finished talking to Jason Phelps, Kaylee Axtell, John Christopher, and Sean Christopher. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to Rick Falcons, who's here with City Theater's production of The Seafarer.
I am.
Aye, matey, The Seafarer. Yes. So... I'm just in. This is by Connor McPherson.
It is.
And I don't know the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it's an exciting piece. It's sort of a dive into the family and Dublin pub scene culture, which is fascinating. It's a story about. Two brothers in Dublin. I play the older brother, Richard.
Let me ask you. I'm sorry to interrupt you. If it's two brothers in Dublin, is that four brothers?
Wait, let me count.
Silly. Not Dublin, Lisa.
Well, okay, I'm
Dublin.
Sorry. I just went to well, father humor.
After a couple of whiskeys, yeah, probably. Yeah, which there's a lot of drinking in this show.
So it takes place in a bar.
Well, it's actually their living room, which has sort of devolved down into a bar. And Richard lives there. He recently has been blinded by an accident. He was crawling into a dumpster to retrieve a few rolls of wallpaper, and he smacked his noggin, and so he can't see. That was around Halloween, and now it's Christmas. So this play is set Christmas Eve, and... Basically, it's five drunks on Christmas Eve playing poker. But,
sounds like home.
Well, yeah, I mean, it struck some chords for me personally, too.
So now, do you play the blind person?
I do.
How difficult is that to play?
I'm finding it very, very interesting. And, you know, as an actor, you have no clue how many of your cues come from sight. And then when you try and take all of that out and just all of it coming in audially, I mean, it's
well, but do you indeed, what's the word I'm trying to do? You're a sighted person right now.
I am.
Do you keep your eyes closed? Or I mean, could still see things as an actor.
You can. You just can't react to them. And you're not supposed to. And I hope you won't see me do any of that. Although there have been a couple times in rehearsal where I find myself staring straight into somebody's eyes going, oh, I can see you, you know. And,
well, I would find that's got to be challenging, especially if you're not wearing anything that will dampen the eyes like dark glasses, that you've got to be very vigilant, I would assume, about
you do.
Not looking at things, and we do that so naturally and unconsciously.
Well, it is. It's a real struggle to do that. We had tech last night, so we finally got the lights in. Strangely enough, that helps. Having lights create sort of a barrier there for you. So it's you know, it's working out okay.
Okay, I have a quick question. How many fingers am I holding up? I'm teasing. So is this is not a comedy, I'm assuming.
You know, a lot of people think it is. It's some of it is very, very, very funny. But the underlying themes of alcoholism and dysfunction in families, that's there too.
Right.
And then there's also a twist to this particular thing, which I won't give away, but there's a certain guest that comes to the poker game that you're going to be surprised to find out who he actually is.
It's Santa Claus, isn't it?
I was just thinking that.
It's close.
Okay.
It's in the mythological kind of.
You know what's interesting, because I can tell that you've been working on this dialect, because I'm hearing certain lilts in your voice that are interesting.
Well, I've been trying to do it. It is the Dublin pulp culture, so there's a couple of also other words that have...
uh-huh.
And in my day job, I have to struggle not to have those words pop out, too.
I would imagine.
But, it sort of takes you over, and that's true for the rest of the guys. We have five, well, I'm one of them, wonderful actors who are in this show together, and it's a very much an ensemble piece, and we're all having a great time doing it.
And the director is Karen Sneed.
Karen Sneed, yes.
Guest director over at the City Theater. How's that? Have you worked with Karen before?
I have worked with Karen before. I did 12 Angry Men. Also at the City Theater, which was actually...
12 Angry Jurors, they call it now.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's been renamed.
Yeah, it has been renamed officially.
Ours wasn't. Ours were... And I was the angry man who was the lead Jacob. But that was a very successful piece for her. And so we... Rick Smith is also in it, who was also in that. Then we have... let me read them. Gary Peters, Rick Smith, Steve Wright, and Scott Friedman are also. So if you're fans of any of those guys, come on down. You're going to enjoy seeing
them. We're fans of all of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So you are opening in a few days, correct?
Yes, Friday night. We're opening.
Exciting.
So tomorrow night is dress rehearsal?
Tonight is dress rehearsal.
Tomorrow night is dress rehearsal.
Oh, and then,
two dress rehearsals.
That's a luxury.
Perhaps some people will be coming.
You're wealthy in dress rehearsals.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's it. That's exciting. It's a very exciting time to be, and it's mind-numbing. And at this point in the game, I'm guessing that you're just stretched in all sorts of different directions, and it's got to be kind of difficult and exhilarating all at the same time.
Well, it's a difficult technical show, too, and sound and light cues and all of that. So we just all put that together last night. So tonight we fly.
Nice. Well, we wish you tons and tons of luck. This is a great play.
Has it
been done in Austin?
I think this is the first time in Austin.
Awesome. Yeah. I think Austin audiences would enjoy this.
I believe they will.
Yeah. And are we all putting on the brogue for this? Sometimes people do the accents of the native wherever it is, and sometimes we don't.
We do.
Well, good. Hopefully you can stick around and join us backstage, because we're all going to do that in an Irish brogue the entire time.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah, well, that was... I'm teasing, of course.
Lisa, you joked during the break. I'm sorry, I totally tuned out. You walked in, and I was excited to see you, Tracy. So I'm
Tracy Schultz in the house, everybody.
Woo-woo, Tracy.
Is this a family show? Do we want to keep kids away? I'm guessing we do, based on language.
I would think mature.
Okay.
Based on the language and
PG-13.
The constant drinking throughout the whole show. You may want to just have an adult.
So you open this weekend. When do you close?
The 26th, I believe, 26th. Is our closing day. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. And you're here at the City Theater.
City Theater.
Well, we're so happy to have you on the show. Hopefully you can stick around and join us backstage.
Well, thank you for having me.
Great. So that was Rick Felkins of City Theater's production of Connor McPherson's The Seafarer, playing at the City Theater November 3rd through November 26th. For more information, you may visit Sherry.
Sherry, Sherry, Sherry.
Carol Channing's in the house.
Sherry Theater. I can't do Carol Channing. Too bad Stuart's not here. He could do Carol Channing.
CityTheaterAustin.org.
There it is. CityTheaterAustin.org. We will be right back.
What else is there for
Okay, we are back. That was all sorts of fun today, wasn't it?
It was a really fun show. What an eclectic.
An eclectic, but it was a lot of McPherson's.
It was some McPherson's.
McConnors and And Mick, Mickey D's.
And McLeese's and McNicks.
And McLeese's, yes. I've always had a bit of the Irish in me.
Oh, a touch of the Irish.
A touch of the Irish. Well, remember, folks, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. We podcast this puppy. You can get us on iTunes. Mm-hmm. You can also get it right in your mailbox. Do you know how to do that?
Yeah, you just go to offstage and on...
offstageonair.com.
Thanks.
No, and offstageonair.com, and just put your name in and we'll send it right to you every week. And that's where you get to hear backstage at Offstage. That's the fun part.
It is.
That's we get to learn a little bit about the people that we've talked to, and we have a good time and stuff like that. We are...
bend in the river.
Whoops, that was a mistake.
Don't.
That's what we call a mistake.
Oopsie daisy.
Oopsie daisy.
On a ship.
I did it again.
Oopsie daisy again.
Why does that keep happening?
Lisa, stop.
I'm trying to cue things up at the same time.
You're just having a good time over there. Y'all, if y'all could see how much fun Lisa Shipps has in the studio.
I always have a good time. So, Austin Monitor News is next. It's a best of. Best of Austin Monitor News.
And you should tune in.
You should. Mr. Tracy Schultz is here to spin that. And but keep listening if you're listening to the podcast, because we're going backstage.
Go on backstage. Okay. Have a great week, Lisa.
Have a great week yourself. I'll miss you next week, but you and Nicole have a great show next week, and I will be back the week after that.
Wonderful.
When I will look at what's happening offstage and on the air. We'll see ya.
I've come to save your neck from the bog of pools of abuse.
We've learned that you're
okay.
A wreck.
The curtain has just come down on, oh my God, I screwed up the musical. This is a story of a hapless young woman who doesn't know what the hell she's doing, but decides to talk to very important people anyway. So this is actually the second time we've started this interview because I wasn't recording. And I'm going to take this moment right now to make sure we are, and we are. Jason, to repeat what we were talking about before, I found it strange to learn just moments ago that you've never been on our show before.
No, I haven't. I'm sorry.
I'll
come back every Wednesday.
Please do. We miss you. So whereabouts in the world did you hail from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Sin City.
Yeah. And did some theater there. Started doing theater when I was a young lad in ninth grade, and just kept on going. Been doing it ever since.
What was the impetus for you to get into theater to begin with?
Once Upon a Mattress.
Really? That was your first
yeah,
show?
Yeah, that was the first show. Yeah.
How old were you and what did you play?
The Jester.
What
it was great.
Fun.
It was really fun.
Was this a school production?
Yeah,
or was
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
So are you a singer as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do you mm-hmm. do, have you done, I want to acknowledge that I've just said awesome about six times in a row.
That's awesome.
True, that's it's, awesome. It's, yeah.
It's an awesome word, but yeah. I don't typically use it. Yes. That's such a lie. I overuse it. Once Upon a Mattress, and you do musicals. I don't know if, have I?
I don't do musicals. I mean, I did them in high school, and I did them in college. I haven't done a traditional musical in a long time. I often sing in productions that I do.
Okay.
I'm also involved in a production right now. With Noel Gallen and Theater Heroes, a play that Jason Tremblay, a musical that Jason Tremblay created,
great.
Started, that is a musical based on the Hansel Gretel story. So that'll be happening in a year. More on that
later. Do you
later.
Get to wear Lederhosen?
I don't know yet, but I play like six different characters.
Oh, okay. So. I'm thinking yeah, Lederhosen probably. Are in order. So Cincinnati, Ohio, you grew yeah. up there. You did theater yeah. there.
I went to theater school in Boston University. Boston University okay. studied theater. That's where I met Vicky Boone.
You studied acting.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Chicago, did theater for a couple years in Chicago.
When were you in Chicago?
90 to 92.
Okay. I moved to Chicago in 94, so we missed each other. Yeah. Which theaters did you play in Chicago?
Really the small, I did a terrible production of Night of the Iguana in Wicker Park in the basement of this building.
Which is where I lived, by the way, in Wicker Park.
In Wicker Park, yeah. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was not.
Oh, cool. I know.
It was really.
I moved there before it changed.
That's where I lived. Yeah. And then I did some original dance theater work, and then I moved to Austin in 92.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why Austin?
Well, at the time, I didn't really like Chicago, and I had just seen Slacker. So I was like, Austin seems cool. I'll go there. And there were some bands that I really liked from Austin. And I could just pick up and leave.
So the thing I found interesting about the Chicago theater scene, I was tangentially involved in theater in Chicago. I did industrial theater when I lived there and did a few shows. But I, like I said, I knew a lot of people that were in theater. But it's a very incestuous, tight-knit theater group. Were you in that group?
No, not at all.
Never made it.
No.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the show. You didn't. So no love lost leaving Chicago.
No. I was ready to move on.
Okay, and you've been here since 92.
Yeah, but then I moved away for 7 years. But yeah, started. So Vicky Boone and I started, and Annie Sweet started Frontera and Frontera Fest, which will be 25 years.
I've heard
old.
Of it. Speaking of Frontera Fest, I want to take a moment. You know, Frontera Fest, Long Fringe. Got a hit when Ground Floor Theater got shut down.
Yes.
And it was canceled last year because of lack of space. We are scheduled to do it this year, but there's not a lot of interest of theater companies. So I'm telling you folks, if you run a theater company, it is a tremendous deal.
Yeah.
For $500 or something like that, I don't remember what the registration fee is this year, you get you get your show produced, and you've got another week. They've extended the deadline, or you know, we're afraid that there might not be enough interest this year, and that's a shame.
That's too bad.
So get on, go to HydeParkTheater.org or ScriptWorks.org and register. Sorry, I had to take that.
No, that's important.
So we don't have the same rules here. We can command people to do things on the podcast.
Oh, sweet.
And we can mention prices. We can do anything we want. So, I did not realize that you are a founder of Frontera.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So
are you involved at all anymore?
No, not really. I'm mostly interested. Mostly I make my own work and then work with Capital T.
Right.
Yeah.
Rick, have you ever participated in Frontera?
I have not, no. I've been an audience member, so, and I've had friends that have done it too. So it's exciting, new, interesting work that you probably wouldn't get a chance to see anywhere else. So
I got the privilege of judging last year,
which was fun,
daunting all at the same time. Totally. It was, but as I talked to some other people who judged other weeks. We had a really good week.
Oh,
we had some great stuff.
That's good.
So that was good because
it's
hit or miss.
Yeah.
And now you've been involved, Jason, in the theater community. I know you were quite involved in early on in this fight for trying to get space.
Yep.
Are you still doing that?
You know, I go to some meetings. I've met with people from the city. I've talked with people in the community. But mostly for the past 3 months, I've been focusing on making work,
right.
But I have stopped going to meetings. It's just meetings. It's a lot of meetings right now.
And
nothing's moving.
And it's lip service.
Things
it's really tough. I've been doing,
right
as
now.
You know, the
I
same.
Know. I'm
so.
Sure you have. So I'm just sitting back, seeing what happens right now.
Well, I think there is a need for leadership in the theater community to indeed make it a theater community, because I'm not quite sure it really is yet here in town. So one of the things I like to ask people, I'll ask both of you guys, if you what is your passion outside of theater?
I am also a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So education is a pretty important thing for me. I was a classroom teacher for 12 years, and now I have my own business where I teach privately. Tutor,
what do you teach?
Tutor, reading, writing, math.
Reading,
acting,
writing, arithmetic?
Yep. Public speaking and acting classes privately.
Cool.
And in group sessions. So I would say education is a pretty major passion of mine.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Rick, what about you? What's your passion outside
of
theater?
Well, you know, the truth is between my day job and theater at night, my day job, I work with alcoholics and drug addicts trying to find them treatment, and I've been involved in recovery for almost 30 years now. So that's a big passion for me, and that's a big part of my life. And
that's a good passion. We call that do-gooder passion.
Well, it's hard work, and it takes people who know how to stick with it and who understand it and are compassionate and empathetic to the people who are suffering with this problem. So,
yeah. Well, good for you. So we were talking before we went on, and you moved here from L.A., you told me.
I did.
Is that where you grew up?
Well, I grew up in Northern California. Then I went to college in San Diego to a theater school, United States International University of School of Performing Arts. Then after 2 years, I got a chance to go up and study with Lee Strasberg
in L.A. And for 4 years, I lived at his house, and I got a chance to study with Lee. And then,
so do you know David as well?
His son?
Yep.
Yes, I have a scar over my eye where David hit me with a shovel when we were planting together up at the house.
Damn,
yes.
David. He told
I
me.
I don't know that he would remember that.
He told me he did it on purpose.
Well, he may have. he had a lovely little life there.
Well, that's interesting. That's fascinating. So that begs the question. So there's a lot of people that have studied with Lee Strasberg, but I don't think many people have lived with Lee Strasberg. So what's the story behind that, or can you tell?
Well, they would choose students that they liked, that they had a particular
And they liked
profession.
You?
They did.
That was meant to sound incredulous, but it didn't really work.
Well, I was young then and very cute, and yeah, it was probably okay. And his wife actually liked me, Anna Strasberg. And I was in her first acting class, and then I moved up into his class. So
now, do you still subscribe to the techniques that you learned at the Institute?
I learned things there that I still use today. Later on, I spent nearly 10 years with Milton Katselas, and particularly Jeffrey Tambor was my coach for about 7 years. So,
well, you were just hobnobbing with the folks.
I
love me some Jeffrey Tambor.
I love me some Jeffrey Tambor too. He's wonderful, and he's been great to me, and he's just a great guy.
Awesome. So you said you grew up in Northern California, but you didn't say specifically where. So I'm guessing not San Francisco.
No, Woodland, which is just outside of Sacramento.
I'm guessing there's some trees there.
There are a few trees.
Don't know why I think that. I'm just thinking trees.
Largely, it's farmland all around. Very, very expensive, rich farmland.
Actually, interestingly enough, I spoke on the show earlier about my friend Sarah Miles. Her mother lived in a double wide in near Sacramento, and we went to see it. I made fun of all these double wides, but it was gorgeous. She lived up in the mountains, and there were snow caps in the background, and this beautiful double wide on a whole bunch of land. It's like, okay.
Woodland actually produces those. They have a couple of major trailer companies that work there. So that's a home of a lot of trailers.
Have you ever lived in a trailer?
I have not. Mm-hmm. We've had camping trailers when I was
Jason,
a kid.
You ever live in a trailer?
Never lived in a trailer.
Yeah, me either. No. I did a show in 1977 in Galveston, Texas, oddly enough. And the actors, you know, we'd lived all over the place, but several of my friends rented a trailer, and I hung out in a trailer a lot. So I don't know what that means. So what? When did you? I'm guessing you got into theater young.
Very young. I was 15 years old, and I heard that the University of California at Davis was
UCD.
UCD.
That's what I call it.
Was auditioning for You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Mm. And at that particular point in my life, I was Charlie Brown.
I played Charlie Brown, too.
Did you?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I was Charlie
Brown.
Not a good thing, by the way, being a Charlie Brown.
Well, I went on to do 5 different companies of Charlie Brown, and then there came a day when I was no longer Charlie Brown. And it was sad.
I was going to guess Linus, actually.
No, I had the stomach ache. I had the angst. I was Charlie Brown. I was Charlie Brown.
So then that big, so I'm guessing we do musicals then as well.
Yes, I've done a few here. The last big one I was in, I played Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof, which was a
For a Austin Jewish rep?
Yes.
I saw you.
That was me.
Okay, yeah. People, listeners to this show know that that was the very first Broadway show I ever saw in 1969 with Herschel Bernardi at the Imperial Theater, and it changed my life. Changed my life. I just love Fiddler. And as a matter of fact, one of the things we didn't talk about here, Prince of Broadway, which is closing this week, I think, is doing a cast album, but their Tevye, forgot the actor's name, but he's a person of color, nice. Singing If I Were a Rich Man.
Really?
I showed a little piece of it on TV, and it looks great. Wow. I searched for it on the YouTubes and couldn't find it. Well, great. What's next for both of you guys? In any way, you know, when you want to talk theater, you want to talk whatever, education or addiction.
I just gotta get through opening night Friday.
Shut up, Lisa.
And then I mean that's all I can think of right now. So
I have a few things going on. This project I mentioned earlier, Gretel, that I'm doing with Theater Heroes. We'll be working on that all throughout 2018, and we'll show at the Paramount in, I think, 2019.
At the Paramount. Yeah, wow, yeah. That's great.
And then we're going to tour it. And I'm going to co-produce the New Directions project for Capital T again. And then I'm creating
which
my
is
own
amazing.
Piece.
Tell people about New Directions.
No, New Directions is great. It's for young directors, folks under 30 who have
like you
not,
and I,
who have not done had a professional production done yet. So we guide folks all the way through the process and auditions, everything. So it's really it's an amazing opportunity. Often, so last year, Delonte Keys did Taylor Max here at the Off Center. It was an amazing production. And so we always have
and
such
was it,
a great...
So how many years have you been doing it? Has it been going on?
It's been going... Last year was the first time I co-produced it, but I believe they've done it 7 or 8 years
okay,
now.
Okay, I thought it was newer than that. Because didn't Rosalind Farris direct her first show?
Rosalind did it. Lily Wolf has done it. Molly Harris has done it.
I remember. It's amazing. Yeah, good, it's really very, good. Very good work. And I'll just take a moment. People can find information about that at capital T.org. Y'all do some really great work with emerging directors. I think that's so important. Well, awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us back here backstage amongst the dumpsters. Mm-hmm.
That's what that's
about. Well, I did not. Typically, we describe to the audience what it's like coming out of the backstage door, down the stairs next to the dumpsters. Mm-hmm. The three of us have been standing here in puddles of unnamed liquid. So, very. Well, it now has a name. and listen, as we go out, we're listening to the dulcet tones of Urinetown. There it is. So, thank you guys for joining us backstage. Okay, take care.